That's intense. That's a little more than I usually get recorded with. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Rabbi Kleinerman, for allowing me to come speak again. So we'll try and get right to it. I hope it's okay. I'm going to edit a little bit the questions here and, you know, mix and match to my liking. So I'm going to separate this. This is a two-part question, and I think the second part goes well with the next one. So this is just, you guys are done pretending that I'm here for no reason at all and just right to the topic. So what type of person is the right fit for Mayan HaTorah? The cop-out answer, which I'll give first, is the same answer that I think they would tell you in Beis Medrash Gavoa of Lakewood and in Chavetz Chaim and in anywhere else, you know, that they have a yeshiva. You know, the right fit is someone who is interested in growing as a Ben Torah and growing as a Ben Torah through their connection to the yeshiva, to the rebbeim, to the mahalik of whatever yeshiva they're in. I think that's the answer for every yeshiva, I hope. So obviously what the person wants to know is the specifics. What are the specific characteristics that make it, and they're really asking a comparison question, and that make it, you know, that this place is the right place and not that one or the next one. Which unfortunately is a little tough to answer in a group setting, just because it is pretty variable from person to person. But the things that we emphasize are the ability to connect to the yeshiva through kesher and time with the rebbeim, the ability to connect to the learning through a lot of hands-on interaction in that regard, the ability to be part of an intense and ambitious yeshiva environment, but also balancing that with some flexibility, and that's where you start to see some variations. You know, some places they keep the intensity dial turned up to 1,000. Some people a little bit down. Some are a little bit in between. So we're not a place that we're looking to turn it all the way down. You know, there are places for that too, where you just kind of come and go as you please. That's very much not what we're looking to do. Sometimes we have guys who think that's what we're looking to do, come join us that way, and then it's unpleasant and awkward later. So please don't come if that's your mentality. But there's just a variety of what people need in terms of, like I said, in terms of the close connection, in terms of the more regular access, in terms of the level of intensity of what's demanded, as well as maybe some of the messaging. Meaning, it's very important, I think I spoke about it last time I was here, for a person in whatever yeshiva they're in to feel like, this is my place. Yeshiva is aimed at me, and I'm a customer. That's a very important thing to feel. And every yeshiva has their own little differences in what the messaging is. So we're doing things a little differently than Chavetz Chaim, a little differently than other places. So sometimes that's a part, whether that's someone who knows that they're going to be going into the working world, and they want a yeshiva that talks to that a lot, which we certainly do. Whether that's someone who isn't going into the working world, planning to go into Arbatz Torah, but just sees that his derech to get there is one that's going to have a little more of that flexibility, and we do that as well.
Rabbi said Mayan is doing something a little bit different than Chavetz Chaim. Mm-hmm. What does that mean exactly?
Primarily in I guess two things. It probably could be a longer list, but primarily two things. Like I said, there's a little more flexibility in terms of the Siddharam and schedule. They're just a little lighter, as well as flexibility. Someone needs for school, this, that, we tend to give a little wiggle room. And I guess maybe it's three things. Add a little more openness in terms of what the person's long-term goals may be. Whether that's, like I said, the working world, the yeshiva world, there's a little bit of that. And maybe a little more room for individual connection. So that's not a hashgafic difference at all, but mostly a practical difference, but it's a significant practical difference. Okay, so I want to jump to the next question, and the second part of this question was, why are we only hearing about Mayan recently? And then there's a next question. I like the next question. I never signed the contract that after this yeshiva I will go to RSA. But it seems like that is the expected next stop and the only option spoken about. For someone who thinks that they did well here and thinks that RSA is a very good fit for them, Should they look into other options or just automatically go to RSA? So, and then I guess, you know, the next question, that last one, why are we only hearing about Mayana Torah now? So, yeah, I hope you never signed a contract that after this yeshiva you're going to go to Chavetz Chaim. So it's good to understand in general how yeshivas work, and that's really all yeshivas. Yeshivas are Klal Yisdik endeavors, right? We talk to a lot of people all at once. And every yeshiva has their things that they emphasize. And like, let's drop Mayana Torah for a moment, as loath as I am to do that. But just talk about, you know, yeshiva in general has a mahalach. Chavetz Chaim has a mahalach, both in the way they learn, in the way they do mussar. The yeshiva was famous for being very difficult to ever admit to someone that, like, oh yeah, maybe you need a different mahalach. Go to some other yeshiva. Like, that was not too much his derech. Yet, I think if you talk to most Rebbeim in most branches, most of the time, they're going to be masking that occasion. Like, okay, Ploni, he's going to be better off in Eretz Yisrael, this, that, like, our derech is just not the right derech for him. Such a thing exists. It's not crazy. So why don't you hear more of that in the yeshiva? Like, why doesn't the yeshiva talk more about, like, yeah, we do, this is how we do things here, but maybe you should consider Lakewood or Eretz Yisrael. Because that's not what yeshivas do. And instead of, you know, as you grow up, it's just important to realize, be like, you guys are the one who are achray for your lives. Your decisions are your own. Yeshivas present what they are emphasizing. Most sane yeshivas are not intending to present what they're emphasizing as the absolute no further discussion. Just hear what we're saying and move on. Most of them, especially Chavetz Chaim, have a pretty strong assumption that, and of course you will also interact with your Rebbeim privately and see what makes sense for you. That unfortunately doesn't always happen because it is the nature of people. You have a group pushing in a certain direction. People just kind of get swept up in that group feeling. But I don't know, fault aside, or whether you want yeshivas to do things differently or not, the answer to that lies in yourselves. Like, you have to take responsibility for your life, however you're going to live it. And that's going to be true at every step of the way. You leave here, you go to Chavetz Chaim, you're there a long time. The push is in one direction. Does that push make sense for you or not? No. You'll be able to talk to Rebbeim about getting help in deciding that, but no one will ever step into your brain for you and decide it for you. And if that's what you're looking for or waiting for, you ain't going to get it. So it's the expected next stop, because that's what that's what the branches are about. The branches are about creating certain type of Talmidim that will succeed in that particular yeshiva's mission. I think, you know, most branches are well aware that not every single Talmud walks out that way. Some of them need further finishing. Some of them will never make sense for. And most individual Rebbeim, speaking to you on an individual level, will address that with you. They're not going to talk about it at the klal, because that's not what they're, and that's why you wouldn't hear about Mayana Torah too frequently. This yeshiva, like all Chavetz Chaim yeshivas, is at one level a factory for future Marbitzei Torah. The Rosh Hashivas at Tzal would look at a room like this and say, I see, how many people are in the room around? 45. I see 22 yeshivas here. Two Rosh Hashivas, right? You heard that or too young? You did not hear it? They would do that every time, and it was great because there would always be then like follow up damage control, where the Hadhalah would like say, Rebbe, why were you saying that to them? You know, like you'd say to a group of guys who are already pretty developed, they're like, no, like, it's like if these guys ask if they want to start a yeshiva, you're going to tell them no, because they're not able to. So why are you saying that to them? And they'd be like, oh, okay, you must know, but they really could. And then they'd like bargain him down to like, okay, Maske, maybe not every one of them. And then the next time you would just say it again. I don't want to sound like I'm making fun. Rabbi Harris says this. You hear Rabbi Harris to tell the story. He tells it. He's the poor man on the other side trying to fight it. It's much funnier when he tells it. And part of the idea behind that is Shiva had a certain belief of what the sort of theoretical potential, and he viewed his job, I think, this is, I don't like to speak for him, as emphasizing that to bring it out. And at a yachidic level, when he's talking to the individual, that completely changes. And now we're talking about what makes sense for you at this stage, at each stage along as you go along. So if you're a person is sort of translating what is the klaliistic speech of a yeshiva into the prat to him without interpreting it at all, he's talking the wrong language. Like, it's just, there's a major miscommunication. Now, you look into it, and sometimes it does translate exactly over, but you got to be checking. You got to be checking with yourself, preferably checking along with your rebbeim to try and get that sense of what makes sense for me. How does this particular hashkafa? The Rosh Yeshiva's extremely idealistic view of everyone, future Rosh Yeshiva, has actual interpretation and translation, even to those that it didn't speak to, quite in that literal language. But it did speak to very directly into who they could be and what they could become and what they could accomplish. But you just have to make sure that you're applying that. And that is one of the places where Ma'ana Torah steps in, where we think that there are different ways of helping people achieve that ultimate amazing potential. And the Chavetz Chaim Yeshiva and any yeshiva is not designed for every individual to reach the heights of their potential. It's designed for a particular type, and then you sometimes need another type. So it was like a practical part of this. So if someone did well here and thinks that RSA is a very good fit for them, should they look into other options? I would think it would be funny to automatically go to RSA for just everyone. I did well here, so I automatically go there. That seems very strange to me without any thought. Particularly because, and maybe you're not fully aware of this, the environment in any of the branches and in Chavetz Chaim are really very different from each other. So a person says, well, I did well here, so mistama, I'll continue to do well. Chora requires certain analysis of why did I do well here? Do I have a sense of what were the things that helped me do well and what were the things that what would be challenging for me if it was different, and where do those fall out? That doesn't mean everyone has to just give up. Oh, it's not going to be exactly the same. I'll give up. It's very good to have a rapport with the Rebbe who can help you work through that, but to just sort of make that automatic assumption, well, I did well here, so of course I'll do well there, it's pretty counterfactual, and it makes sense that it is, because the environment is very different. So you just, a little bit of analysis, why did I do well, or what were the things that helped me do well, what do I need to continue to do well, and am I likely to get it there or anywhere? That's, I think, very...
Probably would say the average guy want to just do well there.
Say it again?
I'm going to say the average guy is doing well in a branch, wouldn't do well in ours.
I don't believe in the average guy. What do you mean the average guy?
No, or are you just saying, being a smart guy, you can't be an idiot and just do things because people do things? Is it because you're actually minor?
Am I telling everyone to do that? Is it because I think the majority of people need to do that and they really won't do well? Or because you shouldn't be an idiot?
Right.
Definitely the second one. It's not good to be an idiot, and it is a little bit of a mice idiot to not think things through like that. A lot of mice idiots, but I don't have a good percentage for you. I'm not comfortable answering that question. Rick Grumblad will be here next week asking that question. This week he's coming. What's he coming? This week, yeah. Ask it. He's his
people. What are the factors that he's talking about that make it hard to do all the things?
A person, in my opinion, primarily does well in a yeshiva through feeling very connected to the learning and the musar and whatever the messaging of that yeshiva is. Some people, because of either their ability in learning or their intensity of their connection or some combination thereof, can feel very connected to a place through mostly the learning. I'm hearing shiur from the rebbeim. I don't usually get to talk to him, but I hear the other people talking, and sometimes I talk, and this is my home. And for many people, that's not enough. They either need to have much more of a direct connection with the Rebbe, they need to be getting from some of the other parts, and that yeshiva's primary way of being mashpia is through that, through the intense learning, maybe even the shmuzin, the intense, like picking apart, and then it's a certain very intense approach to it. Someone for whom that connection is difficult, whether that's because the learning doesn't come as easily, whether it's just their particular emotional makeup, they're more prone to certain ups and downs that make it hard for them to feel like they're always doing that, then they feel disconnected. And then although they can survive, sometimes for quite a while, they'll not feel like it's their yeshiva, and that's a big problem. I don't think I fully answered your question, but that's an answer to your question.
If a guy's doing well in yeshiva, he is connected to his yeshiva here. Why wouldn't he connect there too?
Because
is that the only reason?
It's not just more intense. It's much larger. They're not trying to do the same thing. They're not offering the same avenues of connection. Whether that is that a shkafik? It's mostly practical. It's a yeshiva with 400 some odd people with think we're up to now 9 or 10 Al Hanhanal members, some of whom are very advanced in age. They're designed, because of that, to be connecting mostly in a very broad way. For most people, that's the Iker connection, is the broadband. And then you hope to hop on, and oh, through the having that and building that, I'm able to also get a little of this, a little of that, and I build a kesher with a Rebbe. But that's like, that's a big, big part of it. So for people for whom that doesn't work so well, that's not going to be good. Then there's, like I think I mentioned earlier, there's somewhat the messaging, right? Someone who's less sure about the Harbatzah Torah part of this, it just doesn't feel too home-like to you if you're an yeshiva that's going in a very different direction than you're planning on going. And then it's not able to or looking to be as responsive to individual needs. And therefore, someone who their particular individual need is not being met is much more likely to feel like just drop right through the floor. For people who sometimes struggle a little with how they're perceived or how they're seen in a place that's very big, you know, it's easier to build. Like, okay, I'm not doing so great in this, but I'm good in all that. And I'm the guy in this branch who's good at that. Whatever it is that your special thing is in your branch, there are 50 guys like that already in Chavetz Chaim. I'm sorry. That's kind of the mitzvah. It's a very big place. So if that's sort of how you get, that's how I feel connected with, because I'm the mascot of this thing. Like, you're going to get in mascot line. You're not even going to be the second string mascot, even the fourth string mascot. So you have, if you don't have the yeshiva part to really hold you connected, that other stuff isn't going to work. Right? It just doesn't over there. If you're going to make yourself so unique that you taka stand out in the yeshiva of 470 guys, they're going to kick you out. Like, it's not the only way to achieve that is not good.
So shouldn't you have that in life? There's always going to be people better than you, and shouldn't that go for something you should work on? That
you should
just feel good about yourself.
Yes, but for most people, there's got to be something to hang on to. A big part of that is learning. In yeshiva environment, that's what it should be. I mean, what should that person that you're describing be able to feel? Here I am. I'm getting from the Torah. I'm hearing shir. I'm getting at this. I'm growing. Okay, so this gets better than that one. But here I am. I'm growing. People have to be honest with themselves and see if that's where they're up to and if that works for them. And sometimes it can work for me in a smaller environment where I'm getting a little more of that positive reinforcement in other ways. And some people can do it without any other positive reinforcement. You have to just know where you're up to. So everyone should be perfect, sure, but we're not. So you have to kind of know what actually works.
What would you say to a guy who maybe shouldn't go to RSA, but you feel like second class and you went somewhere else?
Like my Anna Torah, perhaps. Not that I'm saying your yeshiva is the second class yeshiva, but just maybe. You know. The Iker thing that I would say, there's two things to say, but the Iker thing that I would say is, the person that you talked about, doesn't a person have to grow into or grow up? A much, much more important thing to grow into is realizing that doing what works best for your own growth is by far the much bigger first class than anything else. That's a tremendous maturity and stage of development. Like, hey, this is everyone's doing that. It's not good for me, and I'm doing that. That's very, very first class. Secondary answer is, speaking about my yeshiva in particular, you have to make the leap. I can't help you do that. But once a person's in our yeshiva, I don't think that's too much of a problem. Because it really goes back to that first question. The ikkar of the yeshiva is the same ikkar. It's connecting to Torah, connecting to the Musar, growing and developing that way. So you just have to make that leap. And then you're like, okay, this is what works best for me to do that very same thing. And I'm doing it well. If you're doing it well and I'm growing from it, then you feel very first class. Like, it just, because I view all of our Talmidim as first class, because they're growing. Not most of them. But if the person is growing and taking from the yeshiva, like, then they're doing a first class thing. Finally, you know, for some people, if it helps them, and it's just also true sometimes, some people, it's a question of further development. They're not necessarily saying they're not going to ever go to whatever it is, that place that they view as more first class. Just for now, it doesn't make sense. And let me develop and see where I'm up to in a year, 2 or 3 years from now. So that sometimes helps as a little thing to tell yourself, both truth and lie. What are the shirim like in Kew Gardens Hills? See, you notice how I edited that?
Yeah.
It says Queens, but I just added that right out. hacking and non-hacking. The non-hacking is, the person answered the question, the non-hacking is huge. and the hacking is very difficult to follow. So that is the correct answer, I think. Like that's true. Yes, that's what Shira's like. What should a guy do if he wants to be able to have a kesher with the Rebbe in learning during Shir? Is that even possible? So I think for many people to survive in that kind of environment, you have to be able to have the kesher with the Rebbe in learning from hearing Shir from the Rebbe. That is part of it. Not everyone gets to talk in a big crowded room. Now, we're Chavetz Chaim, we believe in back and forth, we believe in seeing the steps. A person has to be holding by able to get that from hearing someone else do that, which is true in almost every shir environment, to be honest, right? In a shir with eight guys, it's not usually that the Rebbe works out with each one of the eight individuals one after the other. The other seven will all be ready to kill themselves while that's going on. It's not how it goes. But you're part of the conversation, and being part of the conversation makes it easier. The bigger the conversation is and the more out of it you are, the more difficult it is. It's much more difficult. It's part of what we were talking about before. So a person to do that well, generally, if they're not going to be Zocha to be one of the people who are really, you know, dominating the hack, they have to be able to get more out of, okay, I'm hearing it back and forth. I talk to my behelfer afterwards who explains to me what happened, and then I hear, oh, that's what he was saying, that's what that was. And then the next day, maybe I think I almost could, I didn't really, okay, tomorrow maybe I will, and be able to feel that kesher. Now, you should be able to seek out some individual opportunities. Rebbeim, as busy as they are, and everyone paints it, they're not usually like bop guys on the head with a stick if they come over to talk to them afterwards learning. But it might feel that way sometimes. The numbers are what the numbers are. It's a lot of people. Is it even possible? It's possible for someone who's sort of holding by that level of connection, that the sheer part connects them enough, and that the little bit of extra interaction that they're able to do is sufficient bridge to make that connection personal and to feel like they're really in the in and out. And that's what you need. And I think for someone who that's not really the case, that's a prime example of someone that yeshiva is currently not a good place for. It's very big. You know, if you're in a shir, and, well, if I haven't spoken in 2 days, that means I'm just going to be out of it. Try and get a read, I guess, from your rebbeim if they think you're likely to be that one, or the guy who's going to be able to be dominating the hack. That's not what you're going to get. Like, it just isn't. But
what's the nafkaminas of having a connection? Some other yeshivas are not so focused on the connection to the place necessarily. I don't know exactly.
No, you're correct.
So I'm saying, so what's the big nafkamina? I come, I learn, I learn some musar, I'm growing. I need a connection. Oh, I'm so connected to the yeshiva. What's the nafkamina?
Because life is very hard, and there are a lot of things that stop us from, both while we're in yeshiva, exerting ourselves fully and pushing ourselves to really grow. So you said, like, well, I'm growing in musar, I'm growing in learning, like, because that's what I want to do. But in spite of the fact that even if you honestly want to do that, there are a million disonos and things that push you away from doing that. And certainly later on in life, there are many distractions that pull you away from the Torah lifestyle that you idealized. The personal connection is what most people need to really, like, keep pushing. And that's true. Meaning, so you can have a yeshiva that doesn't emphasize that so much. Generally, what they're emphasizing is the fiery connection to the learning. So when someone doesn't have that, they stagnate tremendously in those yeshivas. And that's, I don't mean Chavetz Chaim when I say that, by the way. Chavetz Chaim, I do not see as that. It's a question of scale. They have a lot of other stuff, and there's maybe not enough, you know, for a lot of people. But, you know, so a yeshiva that's just purely modeled on almost briskish, you know, approach, that's what they're doing. They don't disagree. They agree. You need a fiery connection to something. Their avenue and their approaches, we're going to do that straight with the Torah. But without any form of that, then you're just like a dispassionate intellectual. And, you know, as intensely as you might think you will feel about it, you don't. Like, it's just not what happens. The Yetzer Hara, you know, creeps in, he sinks in, he comes in every direction, and it pushes us away. And that's true even, you know, the long term is sort of, I think most people recognize that, like, oh yeah, Taka, the Nisilness of the world. But it's true in the very short term in yeshiva also. Because you can get by, and if you're bright enough, you can get by pretty easily without truly exerting yourself. But getting by is not achieving what we want you to achieve. What you should want to achieve, you need some fire. What is the fuel for that fire? For most people, the connection is a very, very big part of it.
Does someone would feel that the first level of connected with the learning of the yeshiva, how important is it to also feel a more personal, individual connection?
if Yitaka feels the first one very well, if he's very confident and healthy, then not so important. But to the degree that he has weaknesses in his own, you know, personal approach to life, not the strongest guy, then it usually will be a problem anyway. But if he's that guy's talking very healthy and confident, and he feels very connected to the learning. Okay, they're baby, you know, they know who I am. Because that person is able to capitalize when he needs to, and he's able to build that connection as needed, and you know, get what he needs. So if you have those two tonight, then I think you can get by.
Is it wrong for someone, let's say, you know, like older coal guys, like, just like not substitute, but like
support? You know, it's probably, not only is it not wrong, it's for most people absolutely necessary in a large environment like that. I don't think you get away without it. So that's its own thing. I mean, some people have a hard time. You were talking before about feeling second rate. Some people that could, like, oh, my Rebbe in Yeshiva is that 30-year-old Kolga. Like, that makes them feel not so good either. It's something to realize. And there's obviously something not so ideal. Like, he says it that way. That's my Rebbe. That's not great. But to use it as an additional support, even in the learning parts, what I was mentioning before with Behelfer, is it, that's part of it. Like, okay, but how am I having this interactive environment? Well, you have the Rebbe leading it, and you're part of it, and you hear it, and you're getting it a little from that Behelfer. Like, that's how you have to be able to piece it together. And that's why the particular person's intensity to connection and their ability is what allows them to do that.
You just got to make sure that Cole guy is there.
Yes, Ray Kleiman has a list of the coal guys. I think it's a joke that he has the list, but he's the other parts are not a joke. Of course, it's unfortunately true. This, not to like that I say this, but there's the yeshiva relies on that a little bit, and they want to rely on that. However, there's a dangerous thing that sometimes the very ones who are offering the most of that, there's a reason why. They themselves are looking for something. You know, they've managed to make it all the way through yeshiva without feeling connected or this served. And now, how do they finally attach themselves? Like, I'm going to be the one giving over. But this goof of the guy who didn't get so much and is feeling empty because he didn't get so much, now he's foisting that on you. So you have to be a little judicious in utilizing that particular tachbula. And how you do, being that I don't think Ray Kleinman really has a list, it's a little dicey. Like, you have to be a little careful. Right, that's the most I can say. But what the actual ace is, I don't know how you have no suggestions. I don't know. Yeah, there's no. I don't know if there's
only
any.
Fewer guys than Queens last year, so then we can actually get a list.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a little bit of a risky proposition because of that unfortunate factor. Actually, no, I do have an ace on that. You should know that Lashon Hara L'Tohelis is allowed. It is. If you find yourself and if you're in yeshiva there and you're gravitating to, oh, this kol guy is a lot, find one of the rebbeim that you respect in yeshiva and ask them to pemole. Not like this vague, this so and so kol guy. I've been talking to him a lot. I find him very helpful. Do you think that this is a good person for someone my age to be getting advice from? Well, you're laughing, but I'm serious. Part of it is he emotionally healthy? Is hashgavli sound? Is he smart enough? There are a lot of people who like to give advice who give bad advice because they're not so good at giving advice. Yeah, there's no hot situations or all of the above. That are, yeah.
Like, yeah, I see it's worth it for me. I clearly understand me because I'm getting good hadrach from him. So what am I concerned besides hadrach?
So I'm not sure that you're getting good hadrach from him. Are you smarter than him or as smart as him? Or this? I'm saying, like, I don't know. That's the question. You are, the yeshiva puts a haskama to a degree on their own staff members. The yeshiva does not put a haskama on their kola members. They put a quasi-haskama on them. You know, I think the Rashiva said you can call yourself rabbi if you want to blotchier, but that doesn't mean that you want to give your life over to that. And if you think it's good hadracha, like, okay, I hope you're right, but, you know, hagufa, you and him can be wrong together. So that would be my, I don't just, you know, if you, I'm not saying one to every time a guy tells you a pshat and a shmooze that you have to go, like, run to Jeremy Harris, can I believe him? But if you find it, that you have that going on in a real way, that. If you're not sure, or maybe even if you are sure, not such a, and you cannot judge by the numbers in this particular thing. So certain people have certain kochos, they're charismatic or this, but it does not mean that they're the people that you should be following. And the yeshiva is not going to go around with a scarlet K for Krum and paint it on Kola guys' heads. Because those guys would think that it meant Kola. Anyway, you cannot rely on that. You have to realize that this is in general. Yeshiva all over. Like the
Bleak guys could be that Krum and made all the way to Kola and like no one said anything. And, like,
guys can make it a lot further than Kola being very Krum. Yes. yeah, of course. What do you think happens?
I
think they should pull him out and shoot him and bury him in that little stairwell over there because to prevent them from damaging the world. But so far, no one's done that. So then they just keep going. It is the yeshiva system. I don't. I'm not knocking the Chavetz Chaim. No yeshiva system is perfect. Every system has people go through. I have people running around also telling that they're telling me they're Rabbi Friedman that I'm horrified of. Like that's just life. There's no perfect control, quality control. Like. So you think it's perfect? Of course it's not perfect. You guys are growing up. Like you have to realize you're in the real world. You know, guys learn, you know, when guys get engaged, they learn with people who you know, the Hilchas Nida, and they're giving marriage advice. And some of those guys are mazikim. You have to be careful. You can't just, assume. I wouldn't do that.
Is this like a Dafka Cheshasha Chavetz Chaim?
Or no.
Say the same for any yeshiva?
I would say the same for any yeshiva. I'm not as well versed in every yeshiva in the world, but I'm pretty well versed in human nature, so it's true everywhere. Yes. A lot. A lot. Yeah, you should be aware of that. When should a person do college? I like this. Is very yeshiva sprach. Do college. Is it a good idea for everyone to have a backup plan, even if they would like to go into chinuch? How is it possible to do college and yeshiva at the same time? So I'm going to reorder them. So is it a good idea for everyone to have a backup plan, even if they would like to go into chinuch? I don't really think so. I don't think that it's don't tell your parents I said that. But I'll explain why. Not because when you're at the ripe old age of 21 and you make a decision that you go into chinuch, that it is for sure with full maturity and will never change no matter what. But that's your parents are right about that if they're telling you that, like, well, maybe they're correct. Not everyone who feels a certain way when they're 21 will feel that way even when they're 25. And it's not so good to be on an irrevocable course. But what they're wrong about mostly, for most people, is that 25, even 30, is not when you're dead and buried. So a person has to kind of know, and you're working the balance of sort of three factors of what are their own percentage, like how likely am I to be matzliach and continue wanting to do this? What is my own personal taste for doubt? And what is my, you know, how comfortable am I with having a suffix in my life? Because that's every hishtadlis, petach, and shayla. It tends to be quite personal. Like, there's a certain degree of hishtadlis that would demand going to college for everyone when they're 20, just in case. But it depends how nervous you are about that, as well as your comfort with adjusting on the fly. And that's the thing why I have a very hard time saying that everyone should do that. It's okay if when you're married for a year or two and you thought you were going to go in one direction, and it turns out you're realizing, oh, actually, it doesn't really work. So I'll have to take it off. I'm going to leave yeshiva and start college, and I'll also have to be working on the side. That'll be really hard. Life is really hard. No one really comes out of it unscathed. So maybe that'll be your hard thing that you have to do. Like, okay. So I don't see how there's a straight answer to that. Everyone should. And just so you understand a little about my Ana Torah, I wouldn't think that my answer to that is any different than any other Chafetz Chaim rabbi, which is probably different for every person in every situation. We don't have yeshiva that's pro-college because I secretly believe that all you guys should be in college. We have yeshiva that's one of the things that it's not even the only thing. It's one of the things that it accommodates our guys in school. And we understand how people could come to that decision at different ages, young, older, or in between. So I don't think it's necessary for every person to have a backup plan, and that kind of answers the when. Is meaning to pay. When is it that a person should choose to do that? Is when their personal assessment of their direction in life, whether it's that, oh, I do need a backup, or maybe it's not a backup, is such that I'm not going to be comfortable if I don't start that. And like now, I'm going to start feeling worried. Or how that's going to. For some people, that's very young. For some people, that's much later. Could be married for 5 years in Kotel and then start night school. Whether or not a person, you know, that makes sense for, also it does help to have outside input. You know, someone who's chinuch all the way, you know, only chinuch, should be assessing you know, maybe at least occasionally, is that, does that make sense? Am I dedicated enough to really live that lifestyle? Do my skill set, you know, work for that particular lifestyle? And the answer doesn't have to be no, therefore I'm going to college, but if the answer is, well, I'm pretty shaky about it, and therefore I'm feeling, you know, something that I have seen is that people who are pretty not sure about it be'etzem, but have not admitted that to themselves yet, will find sometimes that their learning takes a nosedive because they feel unsettled in their life. Like some part of them knows that the direction that I'm going on isn't really where I'm going, and I have nothing else going on. I mean, there are guys who starting school helps their learning, which is obviously counterintuitive, but it's true, because what they felt was directionless, and even, you know, they finally get around to, oh, I know what I'm doing now, and now I'm able to fit in the learning part of that, which is the answer to the last part. How is it possible to do college and yeshiva at the same time? It's hard. There's a reason why we offer, you know, extra flexibility. Kind of depends. Look, there's some people who are doing school for very difficult things that require very difficult classes, and it's hard to balance anything at all. There are some that are going to be doing, you know, it's just a backup. So I'm taking some, you know, fake degree in education online. So it's pretty easy. It's just you need a few hours to, you know, to actually do the whatever it is that you're doing and move right on. But for most people, a big part of answering that question is being able to accept somewhat of a b'di'evid, where, okay, I used to learn X hours a day, and now I don't because I'm doing something else at the same time. I mean, people for whom doing yeshiva means doing exactly what I did last year while I'm in college, the answer is kimat impossible for almost everyone. Most people weren't sleeping that many extra hours that now they can just take it right out of the sleep time, and there you go. So there's some balancing. There's some recognizing of where my, you know, you could ask that question. How is it possible to do yeshiva at the same time as being a father of a 3-month-old baby and a wife who hasn't yet recovered from having a child? It's not possible to do it in the exact same way, but that's what you're up to. So you do what you're up to. So that's really the answer for cases, is strongly adopting that attitude of what makes sense for me right now and doing that, and trying to balance that with the chizuk of not using that as an excuse to just run away from everything. What are the major chesronos of RSA that I should be aware about? I am not going to answer that question. You should ask that one to Rabbi Grumlat when he comes, I think, mostly. I think we talked about some of the challenges. It's really not about chesronos anyway. It's sort of the challenges of understanding what's different. But yeah, I think guys, if you're going to meet with Rabbi Grumlat, you should ask him individually, what are the characteristics of the yeshiva that are good for some people and not good for others? I'm trying to figure out if where I fit into that. I think that's a smart question to ask. It's not the same thing as a chesaron. I'm not saying there aren't chesaronos, but I do not make it my business to go around talking about chesaron. I don't even do it about my own yeshiva. I'm certainly going to do it about someone else's yeshiva.
Would Rabbi Grumlat tell guys that it's not for him?
He's not going to tell a guy that it's not for him because he doesn't know the guy. So how's he going to answer that for you?
Guy,
sorry? You were educated in the same system as me. You never know. You never know, right? It could be. So no one's going to tell you this. It sounds like I'm making fun. I'm not making fun. That's real life. You want someone else to tell you what to do? So you want them to take achrayas. You want them to take achrayas for your life. The reshiva was the first one. So you never know, and I can't take achrayas for you. I can tell you, you know, the kochos and this, that, and then you got to figure it out. So I would not ask Rabbi Grumlat, do you think I should go? I would ask Rabbi Grumlat, you know, can you describe what would be good, what would be bad? And then you need to figure it out. You can try that. You can say, hey, this, the best you'll get out of him is a maybe, you know, from the younger and older members, you'll get stronger answers because they're like more, you know, they don't have that hashkafa as strongly. But no one's going to tell you. Well, I could see how this could be very challenging. I could see how this could end poorly. Maybe there's a might. That's the best you're going to get. That's the best you're going to get from most Rebbeim here most of the time. If you're hearing it very extreme, please listen, because that's pretty unusual. Because truthfully, truly no one could really know. I think I have a great rate of predicting success on the guys who I meet for just a few minutes. Do not ask me to tell you. I get bet on you. I'm not going to, but I bat pretty high in that because I follow up. I see. I'm involved in Kew Garden Hills all the time. I wouldn't tell. Like, I don't know. I have a strong feeling, and you know, if you've been doing it a while, you get a good sense. But I should tell you. I know. I'm a navi. I should take a chrayas for your life. I have enough Gehenna waiting for me for my Gehenna. I don't need your Gehenna. That's going to be up to you guys. So I don't think you can realistically expect Rabbi Grumler or anyone to, yeah, you shouldn't come.
Like, what does Rabbi look for in a guy to see if he'll be successful by now?
That was a smart, quick follow-up. I can just only answer the questions here. What's the question again? Ask it again.
What does Rabbi look at a guy to see if he'll be successful by now?
It's a little ineffable. It's not so easy. I mean, it's more of a sense than anything else. I come back to that word intensity a lot. It has to be a pretty intense connection to the learning. This is not dispositive, but someone who still finds that they have an Isaiah and like, oh, there's a football game. It's really hard. He went to Seder. It was a championship game, and he went to Seder anyway. But that was like a major Nisayon for him. That's a red flag for success in a place like Chavetz Chaim. It was okay when he was in first year, but if he's going into that, he's still holding by that. His intensity connection to the Torah is not as intense. Broadly, if you get the sense, and this goes back to that question before, I'm doing well, that his success is coming by taking advantage of a lot of the support. That support's not going to be there. So that's a pretty easy smell test that RSA is not going to work so well. And someone like that, actually, will likely be successful in Mayana Torah. Someone who the reason why he's not, I'm not so sure, is because the whole project isn't really interesting to him. Really, he'd rather just be making a living in orphan school or whatever. He's not so likely to be too successful. We have a certain degree of success with those guys. We connect them a little more. You know, we try and move them on sooner rather than later because it's not so good for them either. But you know, that's not where we get our core success.
Most people have like a totally different schedule and do totally different things from high school to base match. It's just like a huge jump.
Yeah.
So why 3 years later is it so different to be making a big jump?
How old are you?
I'm 19.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry because of what I'm about to say. Not sorry that you're 19. It's because the 17, 18, 19 is pretty formative. It is a pretty huge difference between a 17-year-old to an 18-year-old, like just in terms of every part of themselves, their emotional maturity, their physical maturity, where their brain is at. That doesn't continue in the same way from 20 to 21 to 22. So that jump can be more difficult. Like if it's a similar jump to you, like, wow, this feels like going from high school to base measures, but you are not a kid going to adulthood in that. That's it's just not the same. So that jump can be much more difficult. I don't mean to say that people can't make a jump. People do make it. That's why I wouldn't say. That's why no one's going to tell you not to. But if it does feel like that enormous of a jump, you came from high school to a place designed to grab people by the hands and pull them up. That is not what Chavetz Chaim Beis Medrash is about.
You were making a jump.
So again, that's the question. Can I do it myself without the support? That's the question. How did I do it? Did I do it with support? Am I doing it now with support? Am I really just doing it on the, you know, with just the strength of my own character, pull myself up to someone who that's really all it's been, and they may very well be able to do that. I would have expected that they already did that here, if they were here for 3 years. And therefore, it shouldn't look like such a big jump. It should be like, oh, that's more of the same. But if that's not the case, then like, oh, wow, that's going to be an enormous jump, but I'll be able to do it based on what? You didn't do it here. See what I'm saying? It's a different jump. There's a jump. The jump there, a big part of the jump is you kind of get into the ice cold pool of real life. Many of the guys you're getting older, and whatever it is you were hiding from, or whatever branch you were about, what's my life plan's going to be? What's that? It becomes into starker reality. So that's a jump of figuring out what's next for me, and that's its own kind of emotional jump. Surviving in a yeshiva that there's the support system is wildly different. And by us, we have a very strong support system. That's not the jump, but it's that figuring out next phase of life or what that might be.
Is that also a jump in RSA?
Sometimes you get away without making that jump in RSA because if you can just keep your eyes closed, it does feel like more of the same. So that happens later sometimes. Reality always wins unless you die before it wins. I don't know that there's most guys. I think it's different. It's different for different guys.
So that jump should happen after 30 Beis Medrash, or?
the realizing reality. I don't know if there's something specific about that year. It's the design of our particular yeshiva system, where the guys are all, you know, in little places scattered around, and then they come to a big place. Then they go to New York, and then the friends start dating or college. It's just it's not like something unique about there. You know, if the Chafetz Chaim system changed and the branches were all for 5 years, and then it would be 5 years.
When does it actually make sense to start designing these type of things for the future if you plan on being cool for a few years?
I would advocate for you should try and avoid making so many long-term decisions, and that you can really, it's just having a sort of comfort with, well, I see, I'm not so sure, am I long-term kolo or short-term kolo? But a year or two makes sense for me, so I'm going to throw myself into that fully and with my eyes open to what makes sense next. I'm not so sure Harpatz's Torah or not, but I sure love learning and I want to grow and serve Hashem, so I'm going to throw myself into that for the next 5. You know, it depends what makes sense for a person. It depends, you know, how strong the competing feelings, you know, are.
Is there an idea of trying to set down goals? Let's say a guy wants to decide to go into Harpatz's Torah, so wants to decide to develop skills in those areas.
Do you mean like through school?
School, yeah.
You mean finding way? There's right. There's different ways of developing oneself. There's, you know, finding little things of experience along the way is I think always smart. Someone who wants to be a Maravitz Torah should definitely do that. You know, not at the expense of the core yeshiva experience, but should be doing that on the side. Doing it more intensely by school or whatever, I think makes sense mostly later. Like you can give yourself some time. There's an argument to be made in the job hunting market that a person will benefit, depending on what they profile as, like what their final, you know, if you're going to be applying for elementary school positions across America with zero teaching experience, you're going to have a really hard time. So a person, now, but that also could be, I'll say, oh, I'm willing to do the full COLO. And then that part-time job that, you know, the more practical guy was telling me I should do when I'm 27, I'll do that when I'm 30 and I'll struggle a little longer. And then it depends what you're willing to accept, but you should, like certain realities, you should realize. You know, if you think that you're going to be one of the great things of starting your own yeshiva is that no one hires you, so you there's no skill requirement. You're like, yeah, you have that interview with yourself. It's like, do you think you can do it? I sure can. Off you go. So, but if someone else is going to be hiring you, then you do have to at some point like be aware that they have things that they're looking for, and you may have to.
Does getting a college degree take away if you're already hiring your own?
It doesn't take away because there's no lack of honesty to not put something on your resume. So if you're applying in a yeshiva that doesn't want your college degree, don't put it on. There's no rule you have to tell someone that you I don't think it really takes away. If you're lucky to be in the most yeshiva in Lakewood, you probably, you know, don't. But I don't think so many of our guys are like geared in that direction. Okay. What time do I have to say? 10:05. Okay. So maybe we'll get to one. How does a person balance his she'ifos and being real about one's kochos? This is a question worthy of like a very long vibe, I think, which, unless everyone just refuses to meet with me, is not going to happen today. Please don't do that. But it's not going to happen today. But just quickly, I think two things to deher. One is we have to learn to be machshiv. Like the Alter in the beginning of the Aretz Tzafa, when he talks about Zesivat Tolus Adam, it talks about the chashivas of every moment, of every mitzvah, of every. So we have she'ifas for long term extended growth, but we have to be able to take a lot of sipuk of every step along the way. And that comes from valuing every step along the way and being machshiv every little tiny bit of growth as something extraordinarily chashiv. So a person who has a realistic view of their own kochos and therefore does not see how some of the more idealistic she'ifos that they're setting for themselves or that other people are setting for them are going to be realistically achieved in the short term. But if they can get a lot of sipuk from, okay, but look what I am doing, look, and seeing it as part of the continuum towards that, so then they'll be able to keep pushing those she'ifos because they have something driving it, a continued sipuk of achieving. And being real about one's kochos. So what does that mean, being real about one's kochos? Being real that okay, this particular thing, like, I am not smart enough to write the Sefer Chazon Ish. I am not smart enough to write the Sefer Achiezer. That's never, ever going to happen. I have sheifas to be a gadol, but I'm not. Like, I don't have, not just brains, I don't have that kind of drive, I don't have that kind of personality. So it's the herring, that's saying, this is still the first point, the chashivas of the godless that you can achieve within your framework. And that can be something extraordinarily impressive with a long view. So that's one very, very big part of it. And another part of it is, I think, always balancing she'ifos, is being able to be makabel, the very uncomfortable stira, that you're going to hear, you'll always hear in yeshivas, certain things that you shouldn't be doing, certain things that aren't right, this is not what a Ben Torah does, this. And the stira and the balance that you have to learn how to strike is accepting that as true, realizing that it's real, because there's a big negiah when there's something that you aren't or can't do or don't want to do. So like, okay, the reason why they're Bayim say that is because they don't get it, they don't get me, that's true. But that the fact that I have a particular flaw or chesaron, even one that runs very deep, is just one part of a broader picture. So I could have tremendous shifas and be growing tremendously as a Ben Torah. And in this area, I'm doing something that's very much not the mice of a Ben Torah. I don't want to say that you should be okay with that, because we shouldn't be okay with that, but understanding of what that means. That doesn't mean that I'm a nobody. It doesn't mean that I'm not a Ben Torah. It means that, okay, in this area, I have this still great weakness that I'm working to improve. In this area, I have a minor weakness that I'm working to improve. I try to use sometimes as a mashal hedyot for this. When I came to Yeshiva, when I left Eretz Yisrael, or Luban was my Rebbe there, he said to me, did I tell the story last time I was here? He'll stop me if I did. Before I came here, he I guess he had a pretty good read on me. He said, you're gonna be there, like you like the learning, just stay involved in learning. There's a lot of hacks that come up. Like, don't get frustrated and go to law school. You just learn, just ignore the hacks. I was gonna go to medical school, not law school, but that he didn't have right. But so I was there, I remember, like a good solid 6 weeks, and I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. It was a great place, it's no hacks, just learning, everything's fine. And then someone somehow, I still don't know how that happened, asked the reshiva if he thinks that the guy should wear ties. Now, I don't know where it is exactly now in the various yeah tie, no tie, masik, nobody here is wearing a tie, right? I remember I was a little confused by it, because when I was in high school, still in Brooklyn, there were Beis Medrash guys there who had come from Queens who were wearing ties. So I'd known that the reshiva had held that. But apparently it was like not so muskam. Well, most people were not. Some of the kol guys, not too much others. And somehow it became a thing where he said, yeah, of course, a ben tie, we should wear a tie. He said, Adam Chashiv, of course, everyone should wear a tie. And it'll come as news to you, is that even dedicated, wonderful Chavetz Chaim Tzamim don't actually want to put on ties. So most people didn't want. Some people were very happy to, because it was an immediate flag that you could wave around that you were a real Talmud. So that's very Gishman. But a lot of people that weighed heavily on, they don't know about the trick of loosening it, so it was like very tight, they didn't like it. So there was just a never-ending string for weeks of individuals cornering the reshiva, in and out of shir. When Rebbe said that guys should wear ties, did he even mean me? And then with their little reason, why not? And then like, but look, my socks don't even match. Like, me too? Just one after the other. Because the only way that they could tolerate it was by some Meir Heter why it doesn't apply to me. And being unable to be okay with, again, and I use okay loosely, like, okay, the reshiva holds that that's what a true, Ben Torah, and that's something I'm aspiring to. And like right now, not I'm not ready, like, oh, the reshiva's wrong, really, it's not right for me, but he's right, I should, and I'm just not. And like I can still, what does that say about the rest of me, who's learning and pushing and this, all that? It says that that's still a weak spot. Okay, Mir Hashem. Like being able to have that attitude can help a lot with balancing your she'ifos versus your kochos. It's like, I'm not up to that, I'm not ready for that, I'm never going to be strong enough for that, like, okay, but look what I'm doing here, and there, and using that to push yourself.
Why can that be used wrongly?
Yes, it can be violently abused. It can be used to kill all she'ifos. And it can be totally the absent, destroy all growth, because you just be okay with everything. It's a disaster. But it's also the truth. So what can you do? The mitzvah is that the truth is that we're not all perfect all at once. So the alternative of that I will either be perfect at everything immediately is not possible at all, or I will edit reality so that I will tell myself that everything is perfect is its own enemy of growth. So the unfortunate truth is, like most things, you have to work in honest balance. And you'll make a mistake. And sometimes you'll use this thing, you'll remember what I said to you to rationalize something that you're doing very wrong and really should not be doing, and there's no excuse for, and that's terrible. Okay, I was saying I don't want to go to Gehenna for you. Okay, a little Gehenna, I guess I'm going to take. But but it's the mice of the truth. You have to learn how to adjust it. You have to learn. You have to try and be honest. It's good to talk to Chaverim, talk to Rebbeim, make sure that you're not wildly off. It is. It's a very dangerous approach. But it's just it's the only one.
What was the first thing you ever saying about that show?
I think I remember what I said 7 minutes ago. What did I say? I don't. What was the question?
Boundaries and right now.
Oh, the idea that an important part of balancing she'ifos with one's quote unquote where my kochos actually are is what's the problem? I guess I didn't speak out. So the question is, when I look at my actual kochos and I don't see how they fit with some of these idealized she'ifos, so what do I do? Do I just keep pushing for that? If you're focused on the incremental small areas of growth that are within your kochos, so that can feel like a she'ifa killer. Like, what's the she'ifa for? To be like slightly less spacey during shiur? That's my she'ifa. Like if a person is machshiv and learns that every moment, and it's in every area, whether it's nesioni taiva or pushing yourself to learning or being more on time for something, that every little bit of growth is a tremendous. Every moment of Bechira Tova, of pushing yourself a little bit past, is a tremendous, enormous thing to accomplish. So it's not giving up on that engine of she'ifos to be a little realistic. Like, oh, that's what I'm focused on right now. I have tremendous she'ifos. What do you mean you don't have she'ifos? I have huge she'ifos. It's that. And then it'll be what's next. And then what's next? Whereas if the person's view of realism is like, okay, I'm never going to really accomplish great things, but I'm realistic, and that's okay. Chas v'shalom, you can be realistic and accomplish great things because those things are great, and then you have a pedestal to keep going and doing more and more great things, and ultimately achieve things that were well beyond when you were being real about your kochos. I have time for one of the two last. Okay, I'll go in order. How does one work on self-esteem without becoming a Baal Gaiva? So two or three things worth saying. First of all, someone who's working on self-esteem, you have to know if you're talking about real chesaron in self-esteem, and the person is really struggling in that area, you shouldn't be following it with gaiva questions or this. You probably need to talk to a professional. And so a person does have to just be honest. Most rebbeim are not going to pull you out and say, hey, your self-esteem is such that you need professional help. But if you're working on self-esteem, then you might want to ask the rebbe, do you think this is something that needs a little... I'll do that, actually. I'm not afraid of that, but of pulling people aside and telling them that. But most rebbeim don't do that.
Professional help?
Psychologist or therapist. I prefer psychologists that rather than the guy who took a night course and calls himself a therapist. But it depends on the... professional help, because sometimes the causes of those difficulties are more deep rooted than most Siddharam or Rebbeim are going to be able to help you through. Assuming we're not talking about that, assuming we're talking about that's okay, struggle a little bit with it, this, that. How do you balance that without becoming a Baal Gaiva? So two quick answers. One is don't worry about that so much. like a lot of areas in Midos, like sometimes, you know, if someone's working on Kass, you have to try and be calm, like you follow the Rambam. You say, well, what do you mean? But sometimes you're supposed to be angry. You say, okay, but right now, you're a hothead. We're pushing back the meter the other way, and don't worry, in a couple of years, we'll figure out the happy medium. So that's usually someone who's struggling a lot with the self-esteem, like, okay, don't worry about Gaiva. But the other part of the answer is that really they don't have so much to do with each other. Because Gaiva is that sense of the haughty praise of self because of the because it's coming from me. And healthy Torahic self-esteem comes from recognition of your own value as a human being, which focusing on the things that you accomplish in that regard are really just the semel for what's underneath. Person is a murkov of a neshama and a body in a way that brings him more kedusha and more importance than any malach. That's what every individual is. That is someone who should not have a self-esteem problem. So when you recognize that, he's not going to have any self-esteem. That's not gaiva. Hashem made that. It was a kochi motzi miyadi. Hashem's the one who made it. We benefit from a little focus on, oh, look what I did here. Look how I see that being expressed in my life by some of the bechira tovas that I did and the things that I accomplished. So someone who wildly only focuses on that will become a baal gaiva. Someone who's struggling with self-esteem, he's on the other side of that equation. He's not focusing on it at all enough in any way, shape, or form. So, okay, that's quick. I'm going to get the last one in for one. What should one practically do on Purim to ensure that day is a day that you can gain from spiritually? Seems that a lot of guys emphasize drinking and eating. Who eats? And so where does the ruchnius fit in? If you eat, then there isn't enough room for the alcohol. Sorry, Eric Clapton. There's not a lot you can do to ensure. No, it's very rare that you can ensure anything in life. But I think it's two things. One, which is totally useless, but there's the truth. Purim is not the day. Who are you? If you're a very physical person and you're not really so spiritual, it'll come out a lot on Purim. If you're the more a person's general shifas are towards some ruchnias, it'll come out a little more that way, which is that's a useless answer. But the second part is, what are you gonna do with that? How do I have good midos for marriage? The thing I talked about that last time. Like, I don't know. Work on your midos. There is something to. You can have a decent effect with just a little bit of focus. So just like asking that question to yourself before you go into Purim. Now, I don't know who wrote the question. If it's a non-drinker who's just angry about the people drinking, or someone who's taka drinking but wants to say, how do I not? So if you don't drink and you're just annoyed at the other people drinking and you're just trying to give them musr through me, it failed obviously because that's I'm not you didn't do your research like that. I wasn't the guy who's going to help you with that one. Sorry, but if it's the second one, then a little bit of focus before. I think I once asked Rabbi Harris, before I don't remember which Yantiv it was before. Like we Chavetz Chaim guys, we're so terrible about Yom Tov. Like there's no emphasis on it at all. Like what you're supposed to be happy for this thing? What are you happy for? And he said, "What do you mean?" I think maybe it was Sukkot. It's like there's so many mitzvahs on Sukkot, lulav and Sukkot. It's like, oh, Rabbi, you're not helpful at all. But there's the nice Litvish approach, which is very true. Let's start getting into like all this Chassidus and just the basic thing. Purim is a celebration of a tremendous Yeshua and a tremendous relationship with Hashem. Spend a little time before Purim re-emphasizing that to yourself, whether that's learning, the Gra and Megillah, or just a little bit of focus on that, and it will put you in the right mindset. In terms of, I made my Purim different, you drink more or less, I don't think that's where you're going to find the Eitzah. The Eitzah is you try and tilt your mind in that direction before you put the alcohol in, and then hopefully it'll continue that way once the alcohol's in there. But that's a little bit of focus. Like, if you're asking which party do I go to or which Rebbe do I sit next to, that's not going to help you. But be aware. You don't have to get into weird machshava. Just the basic Purim exists for a reason. It's where we got to see a tremendous example of Hashem's love for us, the way that He interacts with the world, the way that His hand is in everything that happens to us. That's a tremendous reason for Simcha. Try and bring that Simcha up before you start, and then whatever comes out of Purim hopefully will be an expression of that. All right. Thank you very much for the time.
What is everybody thinking about the perspective that someone doesn't feel yes, kofos that are so strong? So sheifos, but he thinks that I'll put sheifos that are a little bit higher than my kofos, and I'll work like a dog.
A little bit higher is sometimes helpful. A lot higher is devastatingly bad. It's a pretty tough. Hi, nice to meet you. Amazing. Okay.